Yes.
Was it working before? Or should I start? Should I start over?
Start again.
Yeah. So I like I said, I was just made aware that there's a Levaya in Yerushalayim, and in the past, I would be going to such a Levaya. But not that I'm Roy to say anything about Rav Kalman. I'm not Roy, and not that I knew him. I didn't know him. But I knew that we have to be here tonight, and I can't be there. So I just wanted to share with you what went through my mind to catalog it, because it's a chizuk in general when you start something to try to start it right. Tonight is going to be Hakdama. We're not going to really get into the Mishnah too much, but the Hakdama is just as important, I feel. There was in the shul where I grew up, Rabbi Avigdor Miller, Zichron Levracha, I don't know if you've heard of him, but he started in Brooklyn, New York, sometime at the end of the 40s, early 50s, as a Rav of a shul, at the same time as he was a mashkiach in Chaim Berlin. And he first started his Gemara classes in the mid-60s. Until then, it was a young Israel. There wasn't much doing in the shul, as far as shiurim were concerned. And in 1967, he started a new shiur in Eilat Metzias. At the time, there was a man, he's still in the shul to today, he's very old, Rabbi Shapiro. At the time, you know, the rabbi gave him smicha, he was a Mr. Shapiro, he's a working guy. And his wife was traveling at that time to Eretz Yisrael, together with a friend of ours, to go touring in Eretz Yisrael. And just as they were about to go, the 67 war broke out. And the State Department in the United States said that you can't travel, and they didn't let anybody go. And it got pushed off a few weeks, and people had to cancel their trips, and now there was an open seat on the plane, so Rabbi Shapiro had a shiloh to go along for the trip, because he would get inspired from the Kaisel and from other Mekrami Shakdoshim in Eretz Yisrael that you don't have. So he went to Rabbi Miller, and he asked the Rav, what should he do? We're starting a new shiur, but his flight is tonight, and he's able to go. So Rabbi Miller told him like this. He said, Mr. Shapiro, Eilat Metzias will be your Kaisel Amarav. That's what he told him. He says, basically, it's up to you. But if you're going to start now, we were made to start tonight. If it was already the shiur was going for a number of months and you take a little break, it's one thing. But if you're supposed to start and then you don't start, you might never start. So he said, you should stay and let your wife keep her plans like she was supposed to have. 20 years later, he made a siyum on Shas. From that shiur, he never missed a shiur after that Rabbi Miller gave. He went to every single shiur. Rabbi Miller used to give him four mesechta of 5 minutes a day. I don't know if you have a schedule, but he started in the morning, he had in the morning, and he had it at night. And he gives credit to that he started when it started. And I was thinking to myself, yeah, I would maybe want to go, but you're supposed to start. And I'm just sharing with you, but it's a chizik for me, and I believe it will be a schus for the neshama as well. Not that the neshama needs from us, but the krayach of Torah, it does tremendous things that we're going to learn in this perek, that Olam Haba and Tchis HaMeisim and the reward for doing mitzvahs is something that you can't really measure. And therefore, we don't know what our learning is going to do, but in the schus of our haschalah, it will for sure be an aliyah for Rav Kalman's neshama, Bezer Hashem. Because even if we're not Roy, but our learning is Roy, Bezer Hashem. So, we're going to be doing Perichelik, and the Olam should feel free to ask any questions they want. Not that I'm going to know the answers to all of them, I'm not, but I'll do diligence and I'll do research, but I have patience to listen to the questions. Rav Avigdor Miller knew the answers to everything. I'll listen to the questions, and what I know, but what I don't know, we'll work on together, and everybody could be Moshef. If you have something to say, feel free. It's V'chol HaMoshef, Moshef Eloi. It'll be a Milo. The question is, what is Agadato? What is the purpose of Agadato? How should we approach learning this parak? How should we approach the limudim that we're going to get from this parak going forward? So I found that there's many different hakdamas to the whole Agadato in Shas. And I picked out one from the Rav Tzchias just to share with you his perspective, and it was enlightening to me, and I'll share with you. He says, "Hagam she'ein behem inyonu mechreichem v'nitzrochem halacha l'maisa." He says you're not going to find things in Agadato that are halacha l'maisa. So you might think if it's not halacha, what do I got to bother doing it? So he says, but ma'alosam gedoyla ad mo'id mitzad echer. There's a tremendous milo of doing Agadah to Gemara that you're not going to get from the rest of Shas. And what is the milo? Ki bo lahashlo ma'isonu b'darkei ha'emuna ha'tahira. It will help us work in our emuna. And we'll learn what that is. We'll have to understand what emuna really is. U'v'chol ha'ikrin v'ha'yisoydis. And all of the fundamental principles in Yahadis. To know why we're doing what we're doing. To understand that we're serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're here because Ki Hu Amar V'Yehi, Hashem wants the world to exist, and we're here to do His will. And the Agadah to Gemara is the springboard. It is what's going to be the vehicle to teach us these Yesodis that you need. And he writes, I said, Dos Moshe Yisrael Hitbahu Aleim. Everything that we have is built on these yesodis. Our learning, our mitzvahs, everything we do is totally on our emunah, our bitachin, our concept of olam hazeh, olam haba, how we should approach all of these things in life. It will make our lives more meaningful. It will make our relationships that we have with other people in work, with our spouse, with our children, with our children's rabbeim and teachers. It will help us deal with everything in life in a much more understanding way, because we'll know what our purpose is, we'll know what our goals are, and that's what Agadah Gemara does. Agadah Gemara does this. Now, the question is, why is it necessary to have, when you learn Agadah, there are some Gemaras that make you laugh, they're very interesting Gemaras. Hard to understand. There are some Gemaras that make you cry. It's an interesting thing that I was always wondering, why in general, why couldn't it just be simple that the Gemara will say Emuna and then three pages about what Emuna is? Why does it have to be written with a story, with a mashal, with another story and another story, and with words that without the art school you can't translate? It's a strange thing that the Gemara should spend so many pages on it. So, I was talking once to one of my rebbeim many years ago about it, because in yeshivas, a lot of yeshivas don't always do Agadah to Gemara. It's the reality. And there are many different reasons for it, but where I was, they did the Agadah to Gemaras, and they spent time on them, and I used to ask questions, just I wanted to know myself. So he told me of an interesting mindset that happened with Shalom Shadron. And it helps us understand why the Gemara might have chosen this method. When Shalom Shadron started out his career as a Maggid many years ago, so he gave his first speech and the signs went out just like these signs. And he was a real Maggid though. And he came to Zichri Moshe and he gave a speech the way only Reb Shalom Shadron could give a speech. If you've ever seen one of his speeches, he acted out his shmuz. I don't know if you ever were by his shmuzim, but if he wanted to, for example, make fun of somebody who ate too much, he had no problem patting his stomach and making fun of himself because he was a heavyset man. If he wanted to make fun of somebody who, one of his most famous shmuzim, when he spoke, he would talk about how a person's mind wanders. He would talk about how a person could be in middle of Shemin Esrei and suddenly get punched in his chest twice, and he stops and he looks around to see who hit him, and he realizes he was up to Shlach Lanu. That's one of his famous shmuzim that he gave to show how difficult it is to concentrate. Now, after he finished his shmooze, people went over to him to complain. And they said, it's passionate. You're a gadol, you're a magid, you're giving over to us what was said in the prior generations by the Friedrich Gedolim. You can't make a joke out of such serious stuff. How could you go and act out in such an oifen when we're talking about the Igrin? These are the Yesodis, why we say Shmoy Sanigai. So how could you do it? So, Rav Shalom Shadron says that he got a chalishus at the time. He was a little down because he wanted to start with a knack. And that's what the guy told him. A few people came over and said, you can't do this. You're putting yourself down. You can't do it. So someone suggested to him that he should go to the Chazon Ish in Bnei Brak and he should ask the Chazon Ish for advice. So he went to the Chazon Ish and he told the Chazon Ish his problem. So the Chazon Ish said, I want you to say over your whole shmooze that you gave to me with all of the pitzifkis. Don't leave anything out. Give it over exactly the way you did it, and I'll give you an opinion. I can't give you an opinion if I don't see what they're talking about. So he set up shop, and he was embarrassed, but he gave it over exactly. After he finished, the Chazon Ish told him, perfect, don't change what you're doing. And you'll see, you'll be gevaldik. And sure enough, we know the history that Rav Shalom Shadron ended up being the magid for many, many, many years, and he touched everybody's lives one way or another. So he asked the Chazon Ish, he said, but what do I tell people? I'm going to go back. I should just say the Chazon Ish told me I should do it. So the Chazon Ish said, I'll tell you a mashal. And the Chazon Ish pulled the Rav Shalom Shadron on Rav Shalom. And he said to him, you have a child, you have somebody, an adult even, he's not well. You have to take a medicine or have a procedure done. And the medicine's bitter or it's painful. So what do you try to do? As a parent, you distract the child. You might make funny faces, you might giggle, you might sing a song, you might dance. You'll do whatever you have to do to get that kid to smile. And as soon as he opens up his mouth, you stick the medicine in. Why? Because the kid doesn't want to take it. It's too uncomfortable. Or if it's an adult, he can't handle it because the pain is scaring him away from attempting to do what he has to do. So therefore, you create a distraction and then you slip it in. Said the Chazon Ish, you're talking about inyanim that is so hard for people to do. They got to change their lives. They got to realize that, you know something, maybe I'm doing this wrong. Maybe I got to do this a little differently. Maybe I've been doing this wrong. Now people don't want to hear this, and people don't know how to hear it. So you know what you got to do? Exactly what you're doing. If you get them to laugh, after a half hour they realize they're laughing at themselves, then you know that you broke through. So therefore don't change. That's what the Chazon Ish told him. So, my Rebbe told me at the time, that Gadata Gemara does a very similar thing because it sometimes makes us walk away thinking like, wow, I've been messing up big time. Or I missed the boat. Or that's what a moon is. That's been talking, that's expected from me. It can't be. And what happens is if you just have it straight written, it would be overwhelming. Most people would just say, I can't do it. So therefore, the Gemara is set up in a way with the Meisim that we have a limud from these Meisim. A marshal, a back and forth in Agadata Gemara to send a message where it's hitting the nail on the head, but sometimes it comes a little bit around about just enough that it softens the blow a little bit and we're able to absorb it, we can internalize it, we can understand it, and we realize, you know something? Okay. I didn't hear it until today, but going forward, let me see how I could inculcate this into my life, or how I could maybe change this aspect or something. And therefore, what ends up happening is it creates a matzah where you could go by to. So I think that is the reason, or at least one of the reasons, why Agadat Gemara is written, and it's unique the way it's written, because if we're going to want to change all of these things and understand all of these things, you got to come with a little bit of a roundabout way, and then you hit the nail on the head afterwards, and you're able to walk away with something. The question is, Lamaisa, how do you get it? We're going to learn this. We're going to learn Kol Yisrael Yeshem Chelek Olam Haba. It's the first Mishnah. How do we take it from the page? How do we, everything we're going to learn over the next months, how do we internalize it? How do we do this? And the truth of the matter is, this is the Yisoid, Bemes, in all of the things we do, in davening, in learning, in Adam L'Chaveroi, in Adam L'Mokain. Avigdor Miller used to say many, many times that the Bali Musa talk how people are so busy and everybody is so, I have to be here, I have to do this, no one has a chance to live because they're busy running around making a living. And he used to commiserate that if we would just realize and take stock 5 minutes a day, 5 minutes, 3 minutes a day, 30 seconds a day, reminding ourselves what we're here for, what we got to do, why we got to do it, the whole rest of the day would fit in differently into our schedule. And he gave Mosholem. I'll share with you a maisa that I heard. I saw it written in one of the svarim. I wanted to bring it here, but it's not unpacked. I don't remember which sefer it's in. But it sends a very powerful message, and it gets us to understand that the Mishnah says, "Al todenes chaverocha shetagiyim kremcha." You can't judge somebody until you're in his shoes. Now, everybody understands that to mean that if you don't know what the guy is going through, you don't know his whole schedule. So you see him, maybe he's a little short-tempered one day. You can't go over really and criticize him because you don't know everything that's going on in his life. You don't know if you were in the same shoes what you would do. I remember I heard from many speakers that they got up and spoke about the Holocaust survivors, about some of them were a little bit bitter. No one has a right to judge anybody. Who knows if we would be in such a situation, how we would react? And we can't put ourselves into such a situation because we can't even comprehend it. We can't comprehend it. So therefore, you have no choice but to be silent out of respect. You can't judge people. So Rabbi Avigdor Miller and the other Bali Musa would tell us all the time, internalize, start feeling, start understanding what it means that it's real. And he used to say like this, I want to share the story with you, and I think you'll understand it better. In the early 1800s or middle 1800s, I don't know exactly when it was, but either before or after the French Revolution, so we all know there was the General Napoleon was in charge of basically that area of the world, and there was a coup, a rebellion against him, that there was a bunch of rebels, I guess similar to what's happening around the world nowadays, and they were trying to oust him because, let's face it, he sometimes wasn't a pleasant guy to have around. It was his way or the highway, and there was a tremendous amount of murder, and he was very harsh on the people around him, and people got fed up. They ganged up against him, and one time they were able to actually drive him out of his palace temporarily. He had to go and hide because they were able to break through a certain strategy. They broke through to his guards, and he ended up fleeing temporarily. And he found there was a Yid who lived in near the forest, and he hit him. He came into the and he hit him in hay. There was hay on the. He was a very poor man. He had hay, and Napoleon ran in and he hit him under the hay. When the rebels came to look for Napoleon, this guy was shaking in his boots. He said, "Look, I don't know, I haven't seen him, nothing." And they threatened to kill him if he doesn't say what he knew. And he stuck to his guns. They started searching, and there was pitchforks near the hay. And they picked him up and they started poking in the hay. They weren't going to go crawling in the piles, just to make sure he wasn't hiding there. And after a few minutes, they gave up and they left. A few days later, when Napoleon's army overcame the coup, and he was back in his palace, he called that Yid because he wanted to reward him. And he brought him to the palace and he opened up the Eitzer, and he said, you can take whatever you want. Whatever I got, take, because you saved my life. So the Yid said, look, I'm an old guy, I'm a poor guy, I wouldn't know what to do with this money, I have no need for it. I'm happy with everything I got, I don't need anything. But he was persistent and he kept pushing him, there's got to be something you want. So the guy got up the guts and he said, yeah, there is one thing I'm curious about. I want to know what was going through your mind when that guy was sticking you with the pitchforks. That's what I want to know. I want to know how you were dealing with that. It's something I can't comprehend. And I would like to understand that. So Napoleon got angry at him because it was an embarrassing thing. And right away he had him in prison. And they had a court case for him. And 3 days later, the verdict was that he has to get killed for embarrassing the king. I was trying to be nice to him. And this is what he does. He can't do that. And it came right before the time when he was going to get his head chopped off. And he told him to do vidui. And he started saying Shema. And he's screaming Shema Yisrael. And it gets down to 2-1. Right before 1, the guy's ready to cut his head off. And the police says, stop. And he turns to the guy and says, that's how I felt. Now, if you think about it, it's a cute story. But there was no other way for him to get it without this happening to him. You can't understand something unless you work very hard with a strategy to get it. How could we understand Olam Haba? I don't understand Olam Hazeh. You can't, so many emuna, bitachin, so we have to work on creating matzavim, and that's what the Agadat Gemara does, and other Gemaras. It gives us an understanding of, you know something? This is how the Gemara viewed Olam Haba, so this is how we should try to view. This is how the Amoraim viewed emuna, so this is how, if we don't try to take these lessons from the Gemara and apply them to us, so everything we do is superficial. Everything we do is meaningless to a certain amount, and therefore it's so easy for it to get pushed away because it doesn't have that much meaning to me, and therefore if something else comes up a little bit more exciting or more important, so velo dachuf, and we just do something else instead. Whereas if we would realize that, no, we have to create a scenario to have that feeling. This guy wanted to know how Napoleon felt. He created a scenario that this guy walked away knowing this is how he felt. And that's what we got to do in learning, in Ruchnius. We have to go and apply to ourselves how it works. So now, having said all of that, starting the Mishnah, the very first Mishnah, Kol Yisrael Yesham Chelik Olam Haba. Now, Hagdama. Now we'll start the Hagdama on the Mishnah. Kol Yisrael Yesham Chelik. Now there's a lot to talk about, but we're not going to get caught up with the nitty gritty. We're going to try to keep it in an easier way for us to pay attention to it. I hope Ezer Hashem will be a little easier. The Maral and a lot of the Mefarshim over here understand it to mean Kol Yisrael Yesham Chelik Olam means any Yisrael, every Yisrael. If you were born a Yid, you have a Chelik Olam Haba set aside for you. Finished. If you sit on your hands and you do nothing, and you make sure not to do the averis that take away your Olam Haba, which the Mishnah will go on and tell us, the fact that you were born a Yid, right away, you have yourself a ticket already. Now, we have to understand that there are many different seats. You could have the bleachers, you could have the box seats, you could have the VIP seats. The way it's set up, however we want to view it, there are different shiurim in Olam Haba. That's why it's a chilek. A person who works on himself better and has overcome his challenges, he might get such a chilek. Someone else might get a different chilek. We don't know. The Michta Melio brings down on the Gemara, the famous Gemara of Schar Mitzvah Bahai Al Maleko. There's no schar for mitzvah in this world. There's a Gemara like that in a few different places, and he goes on to explain the concept. So, why not? Why can't we? Well, the Maisa, we know that a person does get schar in certain yonim, like the Mishnah says, Eichel Perishayim Ba'olam Hazeh. That means there are the teitzah, the things that come out of the deeds, that the mitzvahs that we're doing, we do get in this world. The keren, the capital, the original money, the original investment, that's in Olam Haba. But we see a lot of times that there is a concept that you do get schar. You could get schar. So how do we juggle what we're getting now versus what's really set aside for us in the real world, in Olam Haba? So, before we get started, we have to understand that the famous machlokes here, the Rav on the Mishnah says that the Olam Haba we're talking about is the Olam Haba after Tchiyas HaMeis. Rambam says the Olam Haba we're talking about is the Olam Haba after a person dies. So, there's a machlokes, obviously, what exactly we're talking about, and I'm not going to decide who's right or wrong here, because El Veilu, as far as I'm concerned, but what we're going to try to do is apply it to us and go through the Gemaras and take out how we can make ourselves better. So, the Michta Melio says like this. There's a Mishnah in Ovis that says, Yofa sha'achas shall kairis ruach ba'ilam haba mikol chaye ha'ilam hazeh. So now, let's understand first what Ilam Haba is. At least what they say it is. Again, we're going to be limited in our understanding. But if we could see the way the Chazal set it up for us, and they make some sort of an analogy or something, a mashal, that we could take from that, so we could use that as some sort of an understanding in how to go forward. So he says that Shah Achas of Koyas Ruach for Ilam Abba is better than all of Chayu Ilam Hazeh. So the question is, what does it really mean? And he explains that if you take everything that is geschmack in Olam Hazeh, that means you try to make a list of everything you enjoy, all your hanah, and then you take all the hanah of your entire life, of all of Olam Hazeh, of everything, even the things that you couldn't get, and you put it all together, and it's even more than that. Because, you know, we have a gvul, but there's much, much more that we can't even comprehend. And you put it all together, it doesn't equal up to kairas ruach of Olam Haba. Now, kairas ruach of Olam Haba, he explains, is an interesting thing. You take a mashal, you walk down a block where there's a bakery. So you could be a block or two away. If the wind is blowing in your direction, you're going to know that there's a bakery somewhere in that direction. And you enjoy it. Now, you might never get into the bakery, and you might never get your hands on one of the cookies and eat them, but you still got hano. That's called kairas ruach from that bakery. You might not, this person can maybe not get into Olam Haba because he wasn't roi, but he was roi to get the kairas ruach of Olam Haba. That whiff, that little bit, that alone, says the Michta Melio, is better and more enjoyable and more uplifting and any other word you can think of as an adjective to put in than all of the hanor we get in Olam Haza. Now the Rav mentioned on Shabbos that the Michta Melio has a way of taking the not comprehensible and making it comprehensible, probably better than anybody. And this is a good example of what the Rav was talking about, Lanias Daiti, because he helps us understand an outram. Now, is it really like a bakery? Is it really like that? I don't know. But I know that the Michta Melio says this mashal this gives me an opportunity going forward to now put some sort of a perspective on what it is. Okay, now we understand a little bit. You take all your noise and you want to know what Olam Haba is. It's that one drop, one whiff of Olam Haba, of such a setting, is better than everything. Now again, if we're not Maminim, and we don't really believe, or we have to work on our Emunah, which most of us still have a lot of work to do in our Emunah, so we always shake at it. Like what happens is, we still have a hard time understanding it. Because it's in the abstract a little bit. But when you go and you can plug it into an example, we all know what it means to walk into a house when someone's cooking something, baking something, and it's geschmack. And we can't wait to get a taste of it. We all know that. You know, and the real truth is, we've all experienced that, and that's why we understand it. If we wouldn't have experienced, you get a guy who comes from Kenya or someplace, he never knew what a baker was, never baked anything in his life. And you try to explain to him this concept, he wouldn't understand it either. You know, the famous marshal of the fellow who was on a faraway island, and he came once to visit on a regular country, and he sees a guy could go to the sink and turn at a faucet and water comes out. It's an amazing thing. He had to go to the ocean and he had to take it in buckets. So he finds out that, oh yeah, there's such a thing as a sink and a faucet and it works, you turn it. It was an amazing thing. So he went and he bought himself a sink and he bought himself a faucet and he's so excited and he takes it back and he puts the sink up against the wall and he puts the faucet there and he shows it, calls the whole town over and turns it on, nothing comes out. And he's kicking it and he's yelling at it and finally he gets so upset, he gets back on his boat, he takes it back to the mainland and he says, I bought a defective part. He said, no, it's a perfectly working part. What do you mean? I set it up and it didn't work. Nah, you don't have any water coming to it. This is what the Bali Musa uses as a mashal to explain to us how, if you don't, fortunately, if we don't experience something, we have a hard time understanding it. That's the truth about it. You take a guy who's going through hardships in life, and he can't understand it, and he doesn't know how to deal with the challenges. He sits down with someone who's older than him, or someone who's not older than him, but who's been through this particular issue. And the guy is empathetic, and he can say, look, I get it. I really get it. So then what happens is, he's able to start putting some perspective to something, because if you experience something, you understand it better. So the problem is, we're not experiencing the Mabo. We're not there yet. So how could we comprehend it if we haven't experienced it yet? The answer is you use these mishalim from the Michtav Meliyoh. You use these mishalim to give us a concept of what it is. And then we understand, oh, this is what it is. Exactly how this is, exactly what it means. But we have something to go on, at least, so that now, if we want to stop and think, this is, okay, now, what is Olam Haba? It's some sort of enjoyment that our neshama is going to get by being in the vicinity of the Shechinah, of being in the vicinity of the Tzaddikim, of Rishonim, of the previous generations, of all the people that were able to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu with Kedusha and Tara, and it creates such a euphoric feeling and sense of Hanah that Nitzchias forever and ever and ever will continue getting it and never get tired of it. Never get bored of it. It's always going to be his chanshes. It's always going to be with that geschmack of euphoria of an unbelievable feeling. And that's only possible if we use these examples to help us comprehend it. Because we are limited in what we're going to be able to comprehend. Let's push it like that. There'll be more tightness. More tightness. I forgot that. So that's how we understand the. If we want to think a little bit of how to view what Olam Haba is. Okay, now, let's also understand one more thing. It says, Kol Yisrael yesh lam chelek olam haba. Okay, so chelek. So the Mefarshim bring down that it says chelek on purpose because everybody gets a different amount. If you look, the Gilyan HaShas brings down of Kiva Eger, that there was a Gemara where people were zeichet to Olam Haba in Mezumin in the times of Rav. Mezumin means that they got Olam Haba already, and they're getting what they. It's an exact amount. Whereas Chelik is each one can see how much they're ready to get. They're going to get. Now, how do we understand that? Now that we understand a little bit of a perspective, what Olam Haba might be. Again, this is not really what it is, but it's something for us to hold on to a little bit based on the Michtam Eliyahu. So let's go to the next step. The next step is, what does it mean a chelik? Do you get more Olam Haba, less Olam Haba? What does that mean, more, less? How much more? How do you weigh it? Is it in kilos? Is it in pounds? How do you do it? So there's a Gemara, famous Gemara in Tainus. And this Gemara gives us a little bit of an understanding of the next step, of what it means, different chelik in Olam Haba. And I believe when we walk away after a few weeks, we're going to have a davar sholem. In our minds, what we're capable of understanding, we should walk away mesudah. This is what we are understanding Olam Haba is. Of course, it's much greater than that. It's just we have to put our hands on something as a motivator for us to continue to do Avodas Hashem to get that. We want to motivate it, it's the Asay Toiv, it helps us do good, it's the Surmei Ra, it helps us stay away from the Ra. So, it's not covering everything. You can't cover everything. It's a Yam Jalem Saif. But it does give us a little bit of a window into how to approach it a little bit. There's a Gemara in Tainus, famous Gemara with a Gleza Ben Padas. I want to share the Gemara with you, because it'll give us an idea of a chilek. It's Gemara on Chaf Hei, and the Gemara says that Rebbe Elazar ben Padas was very poor, and the Maisa, he didn't have any money, and it says over here that he went to give blood. He went to give blood one day, and after he gave blood, he came home and he wanted to eat something, partially to give him karchis, so he couldn't find lavli midi lemitim. He had nothing to eat. There was nothing. He opened up his cupboards, they were bare. He was poor. There was nothing in his house to eat. So Shokol borrowed Duma, he took a little piece of the head, a little piece of garlic of some sort, and he just put it in his mouth. That's all he had, and he put it in his mouth. But it was very sharp, and he was weak from giving the blood. So Cholish, he collapsed, he fell unconscious, and the Rabbanan came to see him. I guess they weren't sure if he was going to make it. So they came, they gathered around him. And while he was standing there, they saw that he was crying. In his unconscious state, he started crying. The chayich started laughing. And a light beam shone out from his forehead. Now, I'm not making this up. I'm reading you a Gemara. And this is what happened. There are bottom all standing around. The other bottom just laying out on the floor. And they don't know if he's going to be, if he's in this world or the next. And then they see this funny thing, he cries, he smiles, and then this light beam comes out from his forehead. And when he woke up, he hit there, so Amulei, my time of Kabachis. So they pounced him, they wanted to know, Rebbe Elazar, tell us, what happened over there while you were laying there? Something was going on. So he says that while he was unconscious, HaKadosh Baruch Hu came to sit by him. And Hashem said to him, and when Hashem was sitting there to like be Mavaka Chayla, so to speak, he said to Hashem our famous question. He said, Ad Mosai Yitzhar Bahayama, how much more of this time do I got to put up with? How many times do we say I can't take it anymore? Because too much is going on and we get overwhelmed. And Rebbe Elazar ben Padas, he didn't know where his next morsel of food was going to come from. And he couldn't take it. And he said to Hashem, how much more do I have to suffer like this? This is what he said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Hashem said back to him, do you want me to go and start the world all over from scratch, from Bria Shemayim Haaretz, that maybe you'll be born into a Shas Mazel and you'll be able to have money? The Maisa, your Mazel is a Mazel of Anias, you're poor. Do you want me to start all the way back from scratch? That maybe, if we start all over, when it gets to your turn, then you'll be in a mazel of Ashiris. This is what Hashem asked Rebbe Elazar ben Padas. So Rebbe Elazar ben Padas asked him back, he said, 1 minute. did I live longer than I have left or not? In other words, he wanted to know if he reached his halfway mark. So he said to Hashem, like, how many more years I got to go? So Hashem said to him, you passed your halfway mark already. So he said, and Cain, maybe, all right, so I'll rough it for the rest of the years. This is his conversation with Hashem. Okay? Now, what happened? Hashem said to him, "Bahai agri the armadi loibeino," as a reward for saying that you're willing to continue going and roughing it, I'm going to give you yahin l'chala omada asen in olam haba. You're going to get chlisri nahara the mishcha parshamin. You're going to get 300 rivers, and you're going to get and it gives them a whole list of things. You're going to get rivers, and you're going to get towns. You're going to get a whole bunch of villages. He gave him, Hashem told him what his olam haba chelik is going to be. And he measured it out. These many rivers, these many towns. He gave him out. Now, again, is this really what olam haba is? So the Marsha and the Mefarshim, the Mefarshim discuss that a lot of times these are mashalim to, like Rav Miller used to say, to what? In order for us to be able to put a handle on it. We don't understand. We can't comprehend. So mainly he gave him some sort of a gvul. So what happened? You think that's the end of the story. The Gemara continues. And Rabbi Elazar said, wait a minute. He said, hi, Vesuloi. Wait a minute. I said, that's it? I don't deserve any more? I mean, look how much I'm suffering. That's all I'm going to get. Now, it's amazing because this Gemara, it has tremendous questions that we could spend days on. But I want to just use it for one point right now. We'll come back to explain the Gemara a different time. So Hashem said back to him, "But wait a minute, if I give you more, then what am I going to give you the other, your friends? Like, I'm taking away someone else's chelak. I can't do that." So he said, no. Now, don't give it to me from somebody who earned his chelak. There's got to be someone out there who didn't earn his chelak, so it's leftovers. So give me that. That's what he said. Give me that. So for Amri Li, so Hashem said, Elazar b'ri giri b'ch giri. Basically, in English, what Hashem said was, touche. Basically, okay, you got me. He didn't have a response to that last question. That's where the Gemara ends, and that's what Elazar ben Hadas told the Chachamim. He said, you know why I was crying? Because I was in the middle of asking Hashem, I can't take any more of this. And then you know why I was smiling? I was smiling because HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave me such a gvalik reward. So I started smiling. And then you know why the light came out of my forehead? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kaviyachol touched me on my forehead and told me to say, I enjoyed that response. That's what Hashem told him. And that's why the light shone out. 100 questions on this Gemara. We'll get to it. The Kravitz Mamorim, Rebbe Chanan, Mechonon Wasserman in his Sefer discusses the Gemara, and we could discuss it at a different time about what's going on over here, because really all he wanted was a sandwich. He didn't need the whole world to start over from scratch. But and exactly why could he go and ask Hashem, why do we no more? Like, it's being a little bit gravy, L'chaira. So there's a lot of Mefarshim on the Gemara. But what do I want to end off over here today is that what do we see from here? That Olam Haba, when Hashem himself is trying to tell Rabbi Elazar ben Hadas, who is far superior than any of our minds, and he's trying to explain to him the reward he's going to get in Olam Haba, he doesn't just say, you're getting Olam Haba, take my word for it. That's not what the Gemara does. The Gemara says how many rivers he's getting, how many things he's getting, how many this he's getting. Why? Why? Because the Maisa is that this is how we mortals relate to this stuff. And in the Maisa, this is how we're going to use Olam Haba as the great motivator going forward in everything we do in our lives and in many of the things we choose not to do. Because we now understand a little bit of what is Olam Haba. And then we understand this concept of chalakim, that you know that I can get more, I can get less, I can get much less. It's amazing. So Lamaisa is, this is Hagdama, and this is how it's a gate to every midah. in emuna, in bitachin, in chesed, in tefillah, in everything we're going to go weiter. We're going to use the Gemaras to show us how they viewed it and how we're supposed to take it and view it going forward, and then we'll be able to be internalized. It will impact in our lives so much for the better, only because we're able to put it in order, Be'ez Hashem. There is refreshment. If the world doesn't see that it's eaten, he's going to think no one's eating.